Birth, the Grand Division, Chapter 36. Lorraine woke up after what seemed like a series of short naps all night. It was still dark, but she took a short shower to wash the wine out of her head from the excellent dinner meeting with the president's heroes. They each had a flawed sweetness about them, and yet they seemed like the only people in the world that could have survived such harrowing adventures. She put on a long skirt and her walking boots with a loose-fitting blouse. Only the slightest makeup would be required today. She put some gloss, her ID badge, and her cell phone in her pocket and headed for the diet kitchen for a coffee. Chef Bailey knew she liked to rise early, especially before a large meeting like this. She could smell the special blend of coffee before she reached the end of the hallway where the fluorescent light was spilling out onto the quiet hallway. As she stepped into the light, she was amazed to find Shelley already sitting with the chef in front of one of a... half-full cup of coffee. "Good morning, Shelley, Chef Bailey," said Lorraine. "Couldn't sleep," said Shelley. "Big day. I've never spoken to Congress before." "Those guys? Facing a camera with millions of people watching on the other end would scare me," said Lorraine. "There's a 5-second safety net," she said. "When you're live in person, that's when you're standing on the wire between two skyscrapers." "I see what you're saying. Well, good morning to both of us, God. We need it," she said, almost revealing her Scottish accent. "How's the arm?" "Another reason why I couldn't sleep," she said. "I didn't want to do any painkillers. They make me say stupid stuff," she smiled. Chef Bailey skillfully filled her cup with coffee and smiled broadly. "I truly love this job," he said. "And we love you," said Lorraine, kissing him lightly on the cheek, which he held out for her. "Don't worry. The other girls won't see it. I haven't put any gloss on yet. Here's to a perfect day," she said, sipping from her cup. The Congressional Auditorium is larger than the halls of Congress and is more suited for showing a presentation. Besides, it's mostly underground and has 100 small classrooms and ample restrooms for little stand-up meetings as deals are made every minute of every day and night in Washington. It could also be darkened with a keystroke, so no cell phone activity could occur during a secret meeting. Lorraine had invited Congress, the Senate, and the entire cabinet to the meeting. It was a risk, because Riker knew that there were spies and traitors packed layer deep in the agency government. They jockeyed for positions on money, power, and influence, and yet he knew that they all worked for the same dark intelligence, playing them against one another, playing them against the American people. Recently, they were no longer shy about grabbing for more chips on foreign tables. It nearly ruined the last presidency with billions in foreign cash brazenly dumped into the election cycle. It incited a feeding frenzy in Washington. The FBI, once the world's premier law enforcement organization, was decimated and ordered to stand down, allowing everything from massive money laundering to child slavery and assassinations to crumble the very foundations of government. Thousands of bureaucrats became millionaires, and congressional insider trading reached epic proportions. There were more Ferraris and Lamborghinis in Washington, D.C. than in all of Italy. Today, they would hear directly what they could only piece together from press releases and news stories. There was no time. The risks are nothing short of a world war. It is time to watch the traitors squirm in their seats. It is planned to be the largest cross-departmental meeting of its kind in American history. Lorraine was perhaps the only person who could have accommodated every personality, every staff manager who guarded their calendars like vassals in the dark fiefdoms of the agency government. She ordered, threatened, compelled, and convinced each invited member to attend. The fate of the civilized world depended upon it, she told them. She walked alone through the tunnel to the auditorium. The rest of the team would arrive and take their places in the auditorium in a couple of hours. There were no box seats in the auditorium. There was no privileged place of honor. It was laid out like a theater with a slight slope up to the rear and a wide stage with a screen behind the stage. The panel of team members would sit on the stage at a table with a modesty shield, while the lawmakers and Supreme Court justices would sit in the audience. She had to feel the room. The agenda and slides were pretty much complete thanks to Shelley's great production work. The program, however, was flexible and designed to be directed by the higher energy that inspired them. She knew most of the people in the room would have sold their lives to the Nephilim. She expected to see allergic reactions and perhaps even foaming at the mouth as the president's plans were laid out for them. There were so many spies layered throughout the agency government that rival cartels didn't even know they owed their allegiance to the same Dark Lord. She arrived at the rear of the stage and walked out onto the wooden floor. She pulled a chair away from the panel table and placed it upstage in the center. Only a few lights were lighting the side walls, leaving the room muted and quiet. She sat down and drifted into meditation with the intention of listening to the future of that room. She calmed her mind and began her conscious breathing. She drifted to her white metal chair placed on a little rise in a green meadow near the edge of the tall forest. She could hear the wind awing through the millions of needles, and the sun was warm on her face as she closed her eyelids for a second layer of astral travel. Her eyes opened again, and she was still sitting in her white metal chair with the flowers and the vines wrought into the back. It was unusual to awaken in the same place, but this time the sun was replaced by a dark night sky awash in stars. She craned her neck backward and looked up through the meadows opening in the forest. When the sky was like this, there was no finding the Big Dipper and then tracing it out to the North Star. It was camouflaged with billions of other stars, all arranged in constellations, stacked one upon the other like an armload of stellar transparencies spilled out onto the light table. Then something caught her eye to the lower left of the sky. She strained at first, like trying to raise up while watching a film with a bad camera angle, but her third astral body was rooted in that chair. She would have to wait for the rotation of the earth to bring it into view. She flicked her eyes around to the right and up and noticed something else. There was a distant galaxy, tilted and flat, with its center bulging and pulsating slowly. She couldn't recall any galaxy that could be seen with the naked eye from Earth. She wondered where the world for her little chair had been placed. It must have been long enough, because when she moved her head forward to look in the lower left corner of the sky, she could see it now. It was a planet. She could see it clearly now. It was large in the sky, so large in fact that it made her heart jump in her chest for a moment. Collision? She asked in her mind. Separation, came the answer. She gasped and brought her hands to her mouth. The tears ran down her astral cheeks as she looked at this gray and black world. It was rotating, and she could see the tiny moon come around as it rolled through space across the tree line, over which she could not even blink. Billions of souls were on that world. Each one had chosen to be there, rather than upon the green and peaceful world carrying her little white chair through space. She felt the loss. It was happening, and there was no turning back now. The two worlds were coming apart, and the souls living on them now were choosing by the second, with their thoughts and their actions, which one would be their home for the future. How many were deceived? How many could have been saved if only the truth had been given to them soon enough? How many good people had been trapped into making no other choice but darkness? The tears would not stop. She wanted to bury her face in her hands and sob, but her astral eyes were locked onto the gray orb in space. shrinking slightly as her lush and living planet accelerated onto a new path to a new star, perhaps closer to the home from which it was divided from the waters so long ago. She held her pose for what seemed like hours, and then the sound came out of her throat. It was the cry she had wanted since this vision began. It made a sound that startled her. Within an instant, she was back on the stage, and the room was quiet, and there were no tears on her face. There was no one there. She was privately relieved, as she could not tell if she had actually cried out, which might have been the real sound that woke her up. She always wondered if the loud noises she heard when she was traveling like this could be heard by people around her. She took a cleansing breath and resolved that her secret was safe. She knew what needed to be said this day in this room. Perhaps there was a chance to save one of these serfs from certain doom. "I didn't want to disturb you," said Loretta. Lorraine stood up slowly and turned around to see Loretta standing there with Shelley and Orphan. "Just getting a feel for the place. Big day," she said. "You might need Secret Service protection," said Bet, as she and Agent Smith came walking from behind the side curtain. "This time, you throw yourself in front of them," said Smith, and everyone laughed. "That was not funny," said Bet, punching him in his good arm. "Well, in little more than an hour, they're going to start arriving. There may be two sides to the Isle in Congress, but there are two sides to this planet as well, and they are about to come ripping apart. The threads might be laid bare today. I need you all with me on this," said Lorraine. "What do you need us to do, Chief?" asked Agent Smith. "Concentrate. Look out there at that congregation and meet their eyes one by one and concentrate on asking them to raise their vibrational level. I mean, put the good into them. Look for the ones who are afraid and send them love. You will all be looking back at a gray and shady planet in a few months, perhaps weeks. I need you to feel that sense of loss now, so you can save every person possible," she said. "I thought we were going to be early," said Dick, as he walked out on the stage with his hands in the pockets of new slacks with burgundy loafers. Kyle, Donna, Katie, and Sarah were close behind. "Wow, look at you guys," said Bet. "I don't know. Roughest bunch of interns I ever saw," said Agent Smith. "Except you, Sarah. You look like someone's home." "Hey, we just came so we wouldn't miss our invitation to the party afterwards," said Kyle. "Trust me, you don't want to party with these guys," said Bet. "Is that really fair?" asked Smith. "I was talking about politicians, slimy bunch of bastards," she said. "And you wonder why we have so many secrets from them?" asked Smith. "I see your point," said Bet. "They're still slimy. It's called grease, and you're right," said Shelley. "Yeah, there's no hand cleaner for that stuff," said Dick. "It's got to be a rough life," said Kyle. "Oh, yeah. What's rough about selling influence and playing the stock market with congressional copy of Insider Trading for Dummies?" asked Donna. "How about waking up every morning with a sore ass and a quarter in your hand?" responded Dick. "Well, there's always that," said Katie, fist-bumping Dick. "Okay, everyone, let's get off this stage," said Lorraine, putting the chair back in its place. "There is a green room at the back of the stage. I believe Chef Bailey has some finger food for us," said Lorraine. "Oh, yeah, his finger food is like better than anything on Colorado Boulevard," said Kyle. "Pavlovian," said Dick and Katie, smiling together. "Come on, Shelley, I'll make you a plate," said Orphan, holding his palm up for her. She placed her hand in his and smiled. She could see Abdullah's eyes looking back at her, but there was a fire building inside of her for this man, though he was 5 years younger than her. "Somehow, I don't think you need me to mention dessert," he said quietly. Lorraine paused as the others could be heard chatting and growing closer together by the minute. She looked back at the large auditorium and searched for a sign of the cosmos she had seen earlier. It was there, somewhere.